You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Good Tuesday, everybody. It's Fantasy Sports Today. Jake Seeley. Nobody else. No, that's all right. I got the fantasy best friends forever, or two-thirds of them. I would guess you guys would say you're the better two-thirds. Frank Stanfill and Mike Florio. Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Today for whatever we're doing today. You're just flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, easily the best two-thirds of the fantasy BFFs. You hit the nail on the head there, Jake.
When you said the two-thirds of them, I was going to say the better two-thirds. So, yeah, you took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, so we're all on the same page. Actually, speaking of being on the same page, you know what I had for lunch, Frank?
Not a salad?
I did have a salad. Okay, I actually had a salad today.
Yeah.
That's a huge mistake, Jake. Come on.
Go salads.
It was. I immediately regretted it after eating it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to try a salad today. I got Chick-fil-A salad with chicken on it and cheese and everything like that. And I got halfway through it. I'm like, this is just a disappointing lunch.
I've never had a Chick-fil-A salad. I imagine if I went to Chick-fil-A, I wouldn't get a salad. So that was probably a bad choice on where you got your salad.
No. Like, the quality was good. I'm not complaining about the quality. I'm just complaining about the fact that I had a salad for lunch. Like, that was the... And good God, how many things from a salad get stuck in your teeth?
I thought you don't do the salad thing.
I don't do... I'm like you. I don't usually do the salad thing. But I gave it a try. I was, like, trying to mix it up today. I was trying to be, like, semi-healthy because I know I was eating Five Guys for dinner.
New year, new Jake. New year, new Frank. I actually have eaten probably 10 or 12 salads this year already, Jake. Believe it or not.
And are you already... Are you
I'd
ever happy
that.
End to end of it? Are you ever pleased with your choice?
I would never use the word pleased to describe how I feel after I eat a salad. I basically put up with it.
See, exactly. It's kind of like you tolerate it. That's a very good way to put it. Florio, are you ever pleased after eating a salad?
Yeah, you guys are going to call me weird. I've said this before, man. Like, every day growing up, I had salad with dinner. So I actually genuinely enjoy salads. Like, when I go out to eat and you get a side option, I almost always go with the salad. So, yeah, you guys can call me weird. I do enjoy eating salads. I'm going to give my man Frank credit, though. He's had more than 10 salads, I would say, this year. He's had a lot.
You're 100% a liar.
No, you've had a lot.
If you were given the choice between, like, French fries, pasta, or salad, you're going to get salad?
Like, when I go to Italian restaurants and they give me the side of pasta, soup, or salad, I almost always go salad.
What is wrong? You why would you do this?
Because salad is good, man. I genuinely enjoy them.
Jake, did you grow up eating salad as your side dish with your family?
No, I don't ever really have that as a choice. I don't ever feel satiated from a salad. I'm never ever pleased. But you know what, speaking of being pleased, the reverse of that, what we're going to talk about today is potential top 100 bust for this year. We're also going to do our picks for baseball, MVP, breakouts, bust, y'all, down the line, up and down the board. But first off, I want to get your guys' opinion because the breaking news, kind of, in a way, before we came out of the show, Colorado Rockies made some moves. They sent Tapia down to the minors. McMahon's officially on the roster. Reports from the beat writers and from other people covering the team, myself included, like, this is the sense I'm taking away from it. McMahon making the opening day roster, to me, sounds like he's going to be the everyday, for the most part, first baseman for the team, which means I think you guys can put the two and two together. Ian Desmond, Carlos Gonzalez, and Parra are going to be the ones that are platooning most of the time. Obviously, Desmond being the right hand of those two being lefties. So I think as of today, this is promising for McMahon, kind of what I was hoping for him to be this year, is a breakout, good high average, 25 plus home runs, and that I'm more concerned about Desmond's value. Do you guys see it that way, or are you more concerned to see it that Desmond's going to get playing time in left and first base, McMahon and Parra are the ones that are going to be platooning?
Yeah, I don't agree that baseball teams do this, but I feel like the contract is going to dictate Ian Desmond getting playing time. And, you know, last year was a huge disappointment, but he was coming back from that hand wrist injury. So I kind of want to give him a pass for that. I think he's going to be better this season. I think he will be in the lineup majority of the time. I kind of view Gerardo Parra as like the fourth outfielder, maybe, you know, to get Ryan McMahon out of the lineup. They'll put him at first base. I know he has that capability. Or if they wanted to play Ian Desmond at first base, they could do that as well. So it's kind of been an up and down ride for Ryan McMahon this draft season. He was starting to creep up a lot, and then once they signed Carlos Gonzalez, it kind of like suppressed his value. And now I think people were buying back in, and rightfully so. I mean, he had a really good spring. He hit 328, two home runs, nine RBIs. So I think for whoever got him on the cheap maybe this past weekend or the past week, you're probably feeling pretty good about it right now.
I am kind of in the opposite camp, Jake. I always thought he would make this roster. I worry, though, that they could platoon him, Parra, Desmond, and Carlos Gonzalez, who struggled mightily against left-handed pitching last year and really salvaged his season with a hot final 6 weeks. But outside of that, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of rolled the hot hand at their corner outfield and middle infield positions, platooned, looked at any advantage they can get to kind of mix and match these guys so they all get playing time, which made me kind of avoid most of these guys all through draft season. Like, I don't own Ian Desmond on any team. I don't own Ryan McMahon. I have some Carlos Gonzalez because I was taking him early in draft seasons before he signed when he was going outside the top, like, 350 picks. But outside of that, I really don't have too many shares of these guys because I do have playing time concerns for all of them.
See, I actually think I understand what you're saying, and that's how I kind of felt as soon as after the Carlos Gonzalez signing. But the McMahon, this, I saw it. If he made the roster, they're going to play him. Like, what's the point if you have somebody like his talent and you're trying to develop it and he's a youngster? What's the point of having him play 3 days a week? You would just send him down to double or triple A, wherever you want him to be, and just say, you know what? Here, you get to play every single day until inevitably Carlos Gonzalez or Parra or somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Who do you think is going to lose the most playing time here? Because, you know, they signed Carlos Gonzalez for a reason.
Parra.
You know, I'm with you. I think Gerardo Parra is probably the odd man out, the fourth outfielder.
Only because of who you're – well, no. Then you kind of get – well, it might be Desmond, and that's why I think the hurt might be on Desmond's value, because you got to figure if he's facing righties, it's going to be Parra in the lineup. And if they're facing lefties, and what are there more of in baseball is righties. All right, so I'll ask you some of the Twitter questions I got and see if you guys had the same answer I did. If you could only roster one on your bench, you're rostering McMahon or Kingery?
Kingery.
Probably take Kingery as well, but that is a close call because you want as much exposure to the Colorado Rockies lineup as you possibly can, and Ryan McMahon's a cheap way to do so right now. We don't know if Kingery's going to be able to play every single day, but the way they're talking about him in a utility role, that he's going to play at least 4 or 5 times a week, you know, whether it's second base here, third base here, you know, corner outfield sometimes. So I think they're going to find a way to get Kingery in the lineup more often than not on a weekly basis, maybe 4 of 6 games, 5 of 7 games. So, you know, I'll probably take Kingery, but that's a really good question.
So yeah, I say McMahon because, to your point, I think, well, put it this way, more immediate value McMahon. And more long-term Kingery, because at least with Kingery, he needs Franco. He probably will. He needs Franco to fail, and then he could take over every day. As of right now, as you said, he gets 3 or 4 starts a week, filling in second, third, whatever the spot start may be. I could be wrong, but as of today, I really do feel that McMahon is starting every single day at first base. Again, I don't think they're having him stay with the team if they weren't planning that, because it just doesn't make sense from a baseball standpoint. How about Avisail Garcia as your backup outfielder or McMahon on your bench?
I'll take the upside shot on McMahon there. That gives me exposure to Coors Field, to this great Rockies lineup. And it's just higher upside. Like, yeah, Garcia could give you a good source of average if his BABIP is, you know, close to 400 again this season. But outside of that, he's not going to do a whole lot. So if I'm going that deep, I'm going to take an upside. The guy with the more upside, which I feel like is Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, I would take Ryan McMahon as well. I think that's a good call. Outside of batting average, I don't really know what Avisail Garcia does well. I mean, he's not going to steal any bases. Maybe, you know, 15 to 20 home runs. But in this climate, you'd rather take a chance on what if Ryan McMahon gets off to a hot start. And we've seen rookies the past couple of years really, you know, break out early on and then kind of just sustain it for the whole year. I don't want to say he's Cody Bellinger, but look, there's a chance playing in Colorado all the time that he can hit 20 to 30 home runs if he gets 500-plus plate appearances. So I'll take a shot on McMahon there as well.
All right, last one. How about McMahon or Orlando Arcia? And obviously it's going to depend on if you need the middle or corner, but just side by side, it's just a bench option.
Orlando Arcia, because one, the middle infield position is thinner. I think you can find a better replacement option for first or corner than you can at the middle infield position. Plus, Arcia has everyday playing time. I think he can be a 15-15 guy in a good ballpark in a good lineup. So I'm going to take the more secure guy at the position that is thinner.
Yep, I'll take Orlando Arcia as well. We talk a lot about the Rockies lineup, but you want exposure to the Brewers as well. It's also a good ballpark to hit in. And we say he's a 15-15 guy because he did that last year, but I feel like he's only going to get better. So there's a chance that he can be an 18-18 guy, maybe flirt with 20 stolen bases or 20 home runs. So I'll take the shot on Orlando Arcia.
Fair enough. All right. So here's really what we had on tap for today. As I said, the top 100 ADP right now, I picked out some names that could potentially bust this year because those are the guys that we always want to avoid. And near the top of the list is somebody who actually did pretty damn well considering how many games he missed last year. He's on pace last year for a better season than he had most years if he would have played 150 games. But at this point of his career, given the injury concerns, given the age, given the wear and tear and how much he's getting banged up at this point, any concern in your mind that Josh Donaldson could be one of the biggest busts this year, Florio?
My only concern is injury. Like when he had that calf injury scare a couple weeks ago, I was like, oh man, here we go again. It's last season all over again. He's going to miss the time. And you know, maybe, yeah, when he comes back, he'll be great. But I don't want to sit there. I owned him in our home league last year. And I really, it helped my team bottom out. I had a few injuries. I had him. I had Cespedes, guys like that, that really just, you can't replace when you lose, you know, your top three or four picks. And that happened to me. And I get why you would be scared with him, but I also think because of what he did last year and the injury scare that it's in his ADP. Like, he almost fell to Frank and I and Greg in the GST draft on Sunday in the 5-6 swing,
yeah,
right? The
4-5 swing.
4-5 swing, yeah. It was, yeah. So at that price, wow. Yeah, I'll gladly take him. But when he was going early in draft seasons, you know, on like around that 2-3 swing, that's where I would avoid him. But if he goes any later than that, I'm okay taking the upside shot.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly put. You know, at his original ADP, when he was at the 2-3 swing, if you had to take him there in a 15-team league, based on that calf injury that we saw, I mean, that sidelined him for 6 weeks last year. So that's something that I was worried about. But if he's falling into the middle of the fourth, late fourth round of a 15-team league, like nearly pick, I guess that would be 60, then yeah, I'll take a shot on him there. There's bust potential with any of the older players, but I think, you know, if he's slipping, I would actually take that shot on him again.
I can't believe he was there at the 4-5 turn, honestly.
No,
I
mean, he almost made it.
I think he went four picks before us. So he went in the fifth, whatever slot fifth is in the fourth round.
It was Chris Vaccaro who took him, yeah.
That's still a decent spot. I mean, if you look at last year, like I was doing with the setup, if you look at his numbers, even if you just forget the games played, if you just took his numbers, those are still numbers that are better than the middle of the fourth round. It's the fact that you missed that time on top of it. But yeah, I don't know. All right, so how about this one? Plus for the Red Sox, and I think it's a good comparison because for the longest time, I always hated Dustin Pedroia. And I said, what's the big deal? 15 to 20 home runs, 15 to 20 stolen bases. What they do? That's decent. It's great. You know, five category production. But let's not overrate the guy just because he produces in all five categories. And that's his new teammate, who is the new Dustin Pedroia in the outfield. And that's Andrew Benintendi, who went 20-20 last year. The interesting part here is he's never hit for that kind of power before. Honestly, probably in that 15 to 20 range. The same thing with the stolen bases. He's probably going to. The thing is the ceiling's probably right around 20 for both categories. So he does produce in all five categories, but it's not like he's elite. I mean, we're not talking 30 home runs and 20 steals or 20 home runs and 30, 40 steals. So your guy's opinion, did we see the best of Benintendi last year and the fact that he's only inside the top 40 concern you?
I'll say no. He's grown on me. The more that I've looked into his numbers and the more I've seen out of him this spring, you know, people calling him Benny Biceps now, he's kind of jacked up. You got to remember, this kid's only 23 years old last year. His frame is still filling out. And he was actually a much better batting average hitter at the minor league level. I mean, every level, he was .290 or better. So I see improvement in the batting average department. I think he can get up to .280. And, you know, if he keeps hitting fly balls as much as he did, you know, around 40%, I think he can get up to 25 home runs. I think he could be a 25 homer, 20 stolen base, kind of, you know, 90-90, maybe even 100-100 in that lineup with J.D. Martinez coming over. The only concern I have about Benintendi is that he struggled against lefties last year. He hit .232 with a .622 OPS. That worries me a little bit, but the fact that as young as he is, I think they'll let him figure it out. Like, they're not going to platoon him. So I think that kind of, you know, gets rid of any doubts that I might have, but I honestly think he could be a 25-20 guy this year, .280 batting average.
I fall in the middle of you two. Like, I don't own Benintendi anywhere. It wasn't that I didn't want him, because I remember early in draft season when we did our first mock draft, like, way back in December, I took him on, like, the 3-4 swing, something in that area, and I was I'm going to probably own a lot of shares of this guy, but he started to climb. And I know Frank and I were in a best ball draft where he went in the second round. So To me, I wasn't willing to pay that price, but if he was going more in the 3-4 area, I like that. I do think he can build on those home runs, and I know it's easy to look at the minor leagues and just be like, he never did it there, but I think the juice ball era is for real, and we're seeing players who didn't display power in the minor leagues come up and hit for power, and the fact that he was always over 40% fly ball rate in the minor leagues, yet so far in the major leagues is only 38%, I do think he can improve upon that, because if he can get that up into the 42% area, maybe he can approach 25 home runs. But again, I to me, we've discussed this on BFFs, he's the perfect fallback option if you wanted a Christian Yelich and didn't get him. But outside of that, yeah, I'm in the middle of you two. I don't think he's going to be a bust, but I'm also, I don't think as high as Frank is on him.
Oh, I didn't say bust. I just don't like his price. You said he went in the, what did you say, second or third round?
He went in the second round in a best ball draft. In the middle
that's
of the
insane.
Second round.
In a 12-team league, Jake.
I can tell
nuts.
You who drafted him if you want.
Sure. Go ahead.
Andy Singleton, friend of the BFFs.
Andy's no friend of mine. I'll tell you that much. Come on, Frank. You gotta admit that's way too high.
Oh. No, I mean, there's no way. There's no chance in hell I would do it. Even with the prospect pedigree that you're paying for his ceiling there in the second round.
All right. 8-Bit Music is on tap. On Target Music. Take it over, FST. It's Jake Seeley. It's Frank Stanfield. It's Mike Florio. We're coming back. Continue the top 100 potential busts and some award picks for this year.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to FST. Yes, it is FST. It's not on target, despite the amazing music from Chris Pavona. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. This would happen, I think, over the show. Even music, because it's the greatest. It's also the greatest two-thirds of the fantasy best friends that are with me. Frank Stanfield, Mike Ford. Look at Frank dancing over there. Yeah. Yes. You're joining, aren't you? Epic music is king.
What game is that from, Jake? That song that was just playing?
That one? I know it, but I don't know which version. Chris Pavona will help me out there. I don't know which episode it was. Altered Beast.
Altered Beast. That's the one.
Altered Beast always trips me up because it always makes me think of Final Fantasy. It sounds like a Final Fantasy song.
Altered Beast. Was that actually an arcade game too? I feel like I've seen it at Barcade.
Yeah, it started off as arcade. It's the one where you go along and then you do, like, turn into a wolf or something. You know? Yeah.
One of those side scrolling punch. You turn into a bear. You turn into a whole bunch of different things.
Okay. The bears. This is way before your guys' time. I'm sorry. You know,
it's all good.
Suck on the teats. All right, continuing on here. Age-wise, Encarnacion. Are we just waiting for the fall? Is this finally the year where Edwin Encarnacion is done? Because he started slow last year, but then he put up an Encarnacion season.
Yeah, I feel like it's just always there. Like, by end of season, like, as streaky as Edwin Encarnacion is, like, he can start off in that dry spell like he did, but at the end of the season, the guy's always going to end up with near 260 batting average, 35 home runs, 100 RBIs. I guess until it just doesn't happen, right? Because he is 35 years old.
But Frank Gore?
We've seen it with Nelson Cruz the past couple of years. You know, once you become a DH, you kind of, maybe it increases your longevity. So it wasn't really a plan of mine to end up with Edwin Encarnacion this year, but I've ended up with him like on two or three out of, you know, I think seven or eight teams that I have, which is like way too much in fantasy baseball. But, you know, I'm still trusting him. I'm penciling him in for 255 batting average, 35 home runs, 100 RBIs. It's just a lot of what he's done year in and year out. So I'm going to continue to go with him until he proves otherwise.
Yeah, I can get why you would be concerned. The age, the fact that for the first time since his rookie year, the swing and strike rate broke 10%. But still, that's around league average. His strikeout rate is below league average. So I'm with Frank on this one. I do think that maybe he gets off to a slow start again because that's been a trend the last couple of years. But at the end of the year, the numbers, like Frank mentioned, will be there. And Frank, you left out, this guy is also a lock to steal two bases.
That's something he does every year, right? Like, it's exactly two stolen bases.
He has 1 year with three in the last four. Three of the last four have been two.
Yeah, he's going to get you at least two stolen bases in four straight years. So, come on, don't forget about stolen bases, man.
Yeah, two stolen bases. All right, whatever. Pitchers, let's move on to a couple of these. All right, I think everybody wildly missed on him last year, but I, especially more so than most, I will openly admit I wildly missed on him because I kept saying the guy struggles with putting people on base, and then as soon as people get on base, he loses his damn mind, and losing his damn mind includes home runs, and a lot of those were in Yankee Stadium. If anybody doesn't know who I'm talking about at this point, it's Luis Severino, who, like I said, nobody expected that, but me probably least of all. I don't even think he was in my top 100 pitchers last year because of what I just said. He adjusted a lot of things, and something that we were talking about during Tout Wars, I was talking to Laura and a couple of other people, and they said they noticed his release point was closer to the plate, and that was his big adjustment last year, which, you know, these are the kind of things like, hey, you know, let the rest of us know. Let somebody else know that you noticed these type of things. That all being said, the improvement we saw last year was exponential. There's no question about it. He is now going inside the top 10 pitchers this year. Frank, Luis Severino, potential bust after what we saw last year.
I'm going to trust him again this year. You know, it's not just a Yankee homer thing. You know, we've gone over this on the Fantasy BFS when we talked about the top tier starting pitching. You look at his pitches from last year. He throws fastball, slider, and changeup. The development of that changeup, it was something that he worked with Pedro Martinez last year in the offseason. If you look at Pedro Martinez in the past, one of his best pitches was the changeup. So I think it's really cool to see one of those things where, you know, you work with a veteran outside of the game on a part of your game, and then you kind of see that success translate. And last year, all three of his pitches graded out as plus pitches according to Fangraphs pitch values. Just look at the stuff, 98 miles per hour fastball, near 90 mile per hour slider. I mean, these are all the reasons why we like Noah Syndergaard. So, you know, I think with that being said, Luis Severino, I think around 9-10 strikeouts per nine, maybe not a low 3 ERA again. Maybe we're talking about 3-3 to 3-5, but I do trust him for that based on the swings and misses he gets and the ground ball percentage in Yankee Stadium.
I don't think there's any bust potential with the talent himself. Like, I think, like, I agree with everything Frank said. I think he is extremely talented. I love the velocity. I love the pitch selection, all that. My one concern is the inning jump and the fact that last year he went deep into the postseason, and we've seen that plague pitchers the year after, especially guys who are doing it for the first time. And I've read this on BFFs a while back, but I'll say it again. I looked at pitchers from the last two World Series, so it's a small sample size. Well, 2015 and 2016, and how they fared the year after. Of the 17 starters I looked into, 11 had a higher ERA the next year. 11 pitched fewer innings the next year. And of those 11, the average drop was 33 innings. So that's my one concern with Luis Severino. That's why I have him the lowest of these tier two pitchers. But I think he is firmly entrenched in that discussion, and he deserves to be one of the top 10 pitchers taken off the board.
All right, well, let's stay with his teammate then. I'll come really right back to you for you real quick. And I'm just going to set this up as an easy question because you're going to know exactly where I stand from this. Why is everybody so apologetic when it comes to Tanaka?
I love Tanaka. And I'm guessing, guessing you don't.
You sell me on why I should believe Tanaka is not going to blow up like he did last year.
Okay, easily. I think I have two stats. And one is that his swing and strike rate was the third highest in all of baseball. Right up there with, I believe, Scherzer and Sale that were the only two higher than his. And the other one was, I think there's going to be natural regression on the home run to fly ball rate. And that was the biggest factor that hurt him last year was the home runs. But since FanTrack started keeping track of home run to fly ball rate in 2002, His is the highest ever recorded. And he was one of two pitchers ever over 20%. And his was over 21%. So if he can get that back down, he doesn't have to get it down below league average. If he just gets that back down into like that 17, 18%.
All right, hold on.
Range,
not to cut you off.
Helps.
Hold on. Let me ask you a legitimate question, because that's a fair point. If he get, why should we believe he can get that back down? Like, I understand what you're saying, but there's a lot of times, and again, I'm not coming after you because I seem to be on the lower percentage of Tanaka and not believing, especially, well, look at the spring, hasn't been that great. It's not like inspiring a lot of confidence. Is why we all say, it's like, oh, he'll get his numbers back down, and given the other metrics, which you're mentioning, which are very nice, why should we just believe? What's going to change to get that back down?
Well, his home run and fly ball rate was never close to what it was last year. Last year was 21.2%. 2016 was 12%. His career average is 16.1%. So I do think if that home run and fly ball rate goes back down to more towards his career norm, he could be in store for a very big season.
Yeah. So Mike is taking a glass half full empty approach to that home run to fly ball ratio, whereas I'm kind of
half full empty.
Yeah, you said both there.
Glass half.
You said half full empty.
Well, whatever. Glass half full. He's taking the glass half full approach. I'm taking the glass.
So is that like a quarter full, or what is that?
Yes, he's taking the 25% glass of water approach, whereas I am taking the 75% of no water being in the glass.
That would be the same take.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be.
Well, either way, if you say glass half full, glass half empty, it's the same take. You're just spinning it two different ways.
I know, we were joking about the fact that you said half full empty, so like half full of the empty is 25%.
Yeah, I don't even know if I want to get into it anymore, but
I don't even know where we are in this anymore. So what are your feelings on Tanaka?
I'm with you. I'm worried about the 21.2% home run to fly ball ratio, because as high as it was, what if it's just part of the juice ball era? Like, what if that's just the result that comes with, you know, whenever people are making contact, you know, putting the ball in the air with him, like, more often than not, it's going out as a home run. It doesn't help that he pitches in Yankee Stadium. It doesn't help that he pitches in the AL East. He has to face the Red Sox, the Orioles, the Blue Jays. These are all very potent lineups. Everyone will point to the xFIP, which last year said, you know, his ERA was 4.74. His xFIP was 3.44. But, you know, he's kind of been in a void for me. I don't have him on any team so
outside
far
of the home run to fly ball rate, everything was the same for him from previous seasons. The hard hit rate, 31.4, was lower than his career norm. The fly ball rate was just, it was a percentage higher than his career norm, but on par with previous seasons. So, to me, the only thing that really changed was the fact that the ball left the ballpark more. And if you bring up the juice ball era,
and his BABIP
in 2016, it was a part of the juice ball era as well. His home run and fly ball rate was the lowest it's ever been in his career, 12%.
Here's what I'll say. The reason I brought up the BABIP is because it was close to the same as it was for his first season. The year before, 2016, it was down. So if his BABIP is more, we know the average for a pitcher is 290 to 300. If he's somebody who sits around 300, I think we're going to see a lot more of what we saw last year. If he's better than that and we can get it back underneath that, including what you're saying, I think there's potential. This is where I'll say what I think. I'm not completely off Tanaka. My problem is the fact that people are still drafting him as a top 20 pitcher, and that's my problem. Is I'm not paying that price after what we saw last year. You got to give me something. I got to be able to buy him and incorporate some of that risk. So another pitcher, which I think we'll finally be all three on the same page, I think, and that's Jake Arrieta. Because if you want to talk about Jake Arrieta, and I know, Florio, I know you'll agree with this because you're one of the people who tweeted these numbers, which I've seen before already. It's the second half last year. His numbers and metrics are almost identical. The only difference in the first and the second half was BABIP. He got BABIP lucky. He's still the same poor pitcher, and now he's going to pitch for the Phillies, and now he's pitching half his games in that terrible ballpark, and he's still in, I'd say, not a terrible division, but a tough division with some hitters, as long as a lot of the Mets guys stay healthy, ha, ha, ha. All that being said, I'm way off in Jake Arrieta this year.
Yeah, I am as well, Jake. You cited it. The second half and first half numbers are very similar, despite the fact that his ERA in the second half was just a little bit over two. The only thing I will say is I have him ranked inside my top 30 because my rankings are points leagues rankings. And outside of last season, the guy is a lock to give you close to 200 innings. So I do think there is something to be said for that. That's the only reason I have him ranked as high as I do. In Roto, I agree with you. I'm not taking him at his price.
Yeah, he was pretty much in a void for me as well, Jake. But I ended up with him in our home league because it's a head-to-head points league, for the reason that Mike mentioned, that he's still likely going to be a workhorse. I'd expect at least 180 innings out of the guy. But along with those numbers that you guys threw out, I mean, the velocity too, man. I mean, his fastball velocity went from 93.7 in 2016 to 92.1, and his cutter velocity went from 89.2 to 87.8. So the guy lost, you know, nearly a mile and a half to 2 miles per hour off of, you know, two of his best pitches. You know, at some point that's going to catch up to him, especially pitching in Citizens Bank Park now, like you mentioned, in Philadelphia. So he was mostly in a void for me. I ended up with him in a points league because, you know, I think the innings are still going to be there for him.
To add on to what Frank said, I think something that goes under the radar, and I want to know if you agree with this or not. When he was at his best in 2014 and 2015, he was throwing his slider almost 30% of the time. So, and that's one of the best pitches in baseball. The last 2 years, that's dropped down to 17.9 in 2016 and just 14% last year. And we always hear it, the slider is one of those pitches that puts the most stress on your elbow. So him throwing his best pitch less has led to his two down seasons. I think they go hand in hand.
I think you're making a great point with that. And it's funny because somebody wrote as a late round target at pitching with Sean Manaea. And if you saw the 1 month that he completely fell apart last year, I mean, fell apart enormously in August. He stopped throwing his slider almost an entire month. He was barely throwing it at all. And to your point, I don't know if it was maybe he was feeling sore, maybe if it was because, you know, he's still young in his career. It was that arm fatigue, dead arm phase, whatever you want to call it, that happened for him just later in the season. But stopped throwing the slider, brought it back, and he got back on track. If you take out most of that month, the guy was a 3-something ERA and a great pitcher for most of the season. So to your point of the slider, I think that's also something to watch and be concerned about. I completely agree with you. I'm not taking Jake Arrieta inside my top 30, 35 pitchers. He's probably more around the 40, which means I haven't and I won't. I don't have any drafts left anyway, but I don't have him on any of my teams. It doesn't surprise me. All right, two more hitters. Jumping back to the hitter department. Eric Hosmer, he's moving on to a ballpark, which for everybody that doesn't know, is actually no worse than where he's coming from in Kansas City. San Diego is actually a little bit more friendly. That all being said, the lineup is a big question. They have some bats in there that... Are you up, down, same old as what we just saw from Eric Hosmer? Where do you stand on Hosmer, Frank?
Yeah, I think where he's being drafted right now is appropriate. I think in that, you know, 6-8 range, kind of in the same tier as Miguel Cabrera, I think that's fair. I will say one thing about last year, you know, people will talk about the .318 batting average. I think that was a little inflated. I mean, he had a .351 BABIP that was by far his career high. So, especially in Roto, what made his value so important last year was the fact that he hit .318. In my eyes, I think he's more of a .280 to .290 hitter. I would agree with you, though. People don't realize that playing in Petco is arguably better than Kauffman Stadium. And I looked at his home run overlay in Petco Park. He actually would have hit more home runs if he played there all year last year. So maybe we see a little bit of an uptick in home runs, maybe 27, 28. But remember, the guy still hits the ball on the ground over 50% of the time. So that's always going to limit his home run upside. I think he's still a lock for 25 home runs. But, you know, if you're projecting him for .300 or better batting average, I think it's more of like the .280 to .290 range.
Yeah, Hosmer's one of these guys that I wish would buy into this fly ball era and just start hitting the ball in the air, because I think he could be one of the best hitters in baseball, I think. And the fact that his plate discipline is so good is the reason why I think he's much better in points leagues than in Roto, because he'll walk a lot, he won't strike out a ton, he'll hit his doubles. That all factors in. But I'm with you guys on Eric Hosmer. He, like you brought up for Tanaka, and you know the BABIP is going to be such a high factor in his success. I agree with Hosmer, because if you look at it, the years where he's hit for good batting average, he's had a BABIP well over .300. The years that BABIP is more around .300, it's never really been below besides in 2012, but the years that it's more around .300 is when his average kind of suffers. So he's one of those guys in a Roto league who has a high variance of outcomes, because it all comes down to that batting average.
Yeah, that's definitely right. Oh, by the way, let me throw this out there for everybody listening. Speaking of variance, DFS, a lot of variance there. So make sure you go check out fantasyfactor.com. It's a perfect site for the casual recreational players. Got flatter prize pools and single entry contest only. That's the best part. They also have fun contests going on all the time, including a home run derby contest, $100,000 this year. So make sure you check that out. It's fantasyfactor.com. You guys over there, you guys playing fantasyfactor.com?
I dabbled during the fantasy football season, but yeah, now the fantasy baseball is starting up. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, same. I did our contest that we held over there during football. I don't really play basketball, so I haven't done anything since, but come baseball.
Really?
Starts
I thought both of you guys would have been some basketball. More so Frank, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I played DFS here and there, but, you know, honestly, I just haven't really been very successful at it. So, I don't know. I guess that's kind of pushed me away from it. I gotta hook up with Benny Ricciardi again and figure out what I'm doing wrong.
That's exactly it. I ask Benny for his lineup advice all the time. The only problem is, like, the tournaments. It's worth, honestly, I think of the three, football, basketball, and baseball, it's the worst for tournaments. You have to have the perfect lineup to even get a decent amount of change back. But anyway, hitting a break, coming back, one more hitter, and then we're going to do some picks for the MLB season, see how many we can get through today. It's Jake, it's Frank, Florio. It is FST. You know what show you're watching, just so you know.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Welcome back to FST. It's Jake Seeley. It's Frank Stample, Mike Florio. Like I said, it is FST. You are turning to the right show. You guys, you recognize this, or are you way too young for this?
This is 150 million percent X-Men.
Did you know that before you started doing the work here in the network?
Oh, yeah,
like, would
for
you
sure.
Know? Okay.
Yeah, I watched that show religiously as a kid. It might be the show that I watched more than any other cartoon growing up was X-Men.
Were you an X-Men watcher? There, Florio?
Yeah, but not like that song sounded very familiar, but I wouldn't have been able to tell you. I was a more casual watcher.
Yeah, whatever. You're
I see the glass 75% empty.
Yeah, there you go. It's honestly one of the best cartoons of all time.
Who's your favorite X-Men character, Jake?
I was always a Gambit.
All right. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of one of the hype guys. He's a hype bro. There you go.
I definitely liked the hype bros in the X-Men. I liked Wolverine and Gambit.
See, Wolverine's the two. Like, everybody likes Wolverine.
Yeah,
I was a big guys. Wolverine guy. I actually really enjoyed when Wolverine wore the brown and orange suit before it turned into the yellow and blue suit.
Hmm. Did you ever play the arcade game where it was four? You had like four people, like as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one?
Yeah.
Where you could play.
I actually defeated the entire game at Barcade with a buddy of mine. It took us about $10 and quarters, but it was well worth it because how many people could say they beat the Ninja Turtles game in the actual arcade, so it was
did you ever play like the Marvel versus Capcom with these two?
Yeah.
The fighting game?
Yeah.
That was always great. By the way, Cyclops, one of the most underrated characters in that game because his special took up like half the screen or 50% or half full glass there for you, Frank, and took up like half the screen. So when you did his special, you always got like a 40-50 hit combo. Terrific. Always put him on your team.
I could tell which kind of player you were in a fighting game because you definitely like the cheesy characters who have those specials like that.
No, I don't like cheesy.
Jake, who did you play Mortal Kombat? Who did you play as in that?
I was never a really big Mortal Kombat person. I never liked it that much, but I usually, if I did, was Sub-Zero. Only because it had nothing to do with, like, I know Frank's going to be like, oh, another cheesy one, you could freeze people. I just wasn't that good at learning all the combinations. I wanted something simple. Like, when I go back to Street Fighter, I was Ryu or Guile, because Guile was very simple, back and forth or up and down. Like, I don't like the ones where you got to go, it's like six different directions. My hands just don't work that way.
I was a hype guy in that game. I used Sub-Zero and Scorpion.
Yeah,
hype guys.
I like Scorpions. I play video games, but I'm not a big fighting game guy, to be honest. I'm just never really good at them.
Same.
See, I need the simple combinations. That's what I'm saying. I can't do the ones where it's right, then like back left, and then back, you know, like the ones where you have to go four different, like, I can't do that type of stuff. I need like a half circle or back and forth, or I can't do, that's why I always lost. I need the simple characters.
Jake was definitely a Kirby guy in Super Smash.
No, I wasn't. You know who I was in Super Smash? Knight. The Knight guy.
Oh, like Meta Knight?
Meta Knight, yeah.
I'm going to Google.
I loved Meta Knight. I was unstoppable with Meta Knight.
I always used Captain Falcon.
Falcon, poo!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's not a very common one.
I would try to
That's
use.
Rare.
I would try to use link. Hashtag check the link.
Okay,
there's your there free you plug, Jake.
Thank you. Thank you,
Jake. I'm just. I looked up Meta Knight. He is basically like the evil version of Kirby.
No. But the thing was, his spin attack also curves up, and then he's got the disappearance. Like, dude, I'm telling you, he's the best. He doesn't float quite as much as Kirby. But all he does float.
I was close, though.
He does float. You were close.
Did you pass out when the video of the new Super Smash came out? Because I heard there was like a viral video of like people passing out when they heard it was released.
A guy passed out and a girl cried. That's all you need to know, Jake.
Oh, my gosh. All right. In any case, before we lose half these people, let's get back to one more potential bust, and then I will have time for what, maybe five picks for our upcoming season here. Last one. I was very high on him last year for where he was going, and I had him in almost all my leagues. He's actually part of the reason that I won labor last year because of the steals, because of the value I got on him. That's not like a promotion from like, oh, look at me. I'm just saying I was on him last year, but now his price being in the third round this year, I'm not. I don't own him anywhere. The potential bust of Elvis Andrus, because he did have a career season last year.
Well, Jake, you mentioned third round. Where were you seeing him go in the third round? Because I've typically seen him gone in like the fifth to seventh round of like 15-team drafts. So have you actually seen him go in the third round?
Yeah, I've actually seen him most drafts of him in. I've seen him go in like the 3-4 turn.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, there's no chance in hell that I'm paying that price for him. But
no chance.
If that's what you got. But I think, you know.
Did you see Shane's at the hospital?
Oh, really?
Kevin Owens put him there, or?
No, this is like legit. He has diverticulitis, and he's going to have like a section of his colon removed.
Oh, the thing that Brock Lesnar had?
Yep.
So is he not going to be at Mania now?
Probably not, seeing as how it's a week and a half away, and that's not a surgery you just pop back up from.
Yeah, that's true.
So who's Daniel Bryan's partner going
to
be?
I might have to find out. I might try to quick swerve on the storyline tonight. I'll have to watch and find out. Which, by the way, as a quick sidebar, since we got off on this tangent, I told Greg I was going to complain about today. Ronda Rousey is the worst. I hate her.
I didn't watch Raw last night.
I haven't watched Raw in like...
She was god awful on the mic again, and I don't know if you saw this clip, but she was on Golic and who is it now? Wingo this morning, and he said that what was the clue when you decided that you weren't going to go back to MMA anymore? She's like, I haven't said that. And he goes, well, like, so you're saying you could go back in time and wrestle again? She's like, I'm not a time traveler. She's a female dick. She's a dick, but she's female. Like, you know the other word that there is out there for that, but I can't say that word.
Oh man. A female D. Not just a regular D, a female D.
Did she do her mean snarl after like hitting
go
someone
watch
last
the clip
night?
Of, go watch if oh no, she was terrible. It has some orange eyeliner crap on. She's just so awful on the mic. I hate her going back to MMA with the Misha Tate stuff, and then after that with Home. She's just, I hate her so much. And now people are cheering her. She's got her own leather jacket now. She still comes out to that stupid music. Yeah. I don't give a damn about my reputation.
Because that's a really good wrestling song. Like, I get that it was her song in UFC, but that just doesn't fit her persona as well. Honestly, I don't even know what her persona is right now in wrestling or what they're trying
She's
to
fake
make
hard.
Her.
That's what she is.
She should be like Brock Lesnar. Like, Paul Heyman should be her mouthpiece, or get her a manager or something and have her be badass. Like, you can't have Ronda Rousey coming out smiling, skipping around to this kind of song. Like, have to make her a badass.
I just thought of it. You know who her mouthpiece should be?
Heyman.
Lana?
Oh, Lana.
Because Lana can't wrestle at all, and they try to let her wrestle. Just put the two people who can't do something.
I think they might give her Heyman after Brock leaves.
Brock and, I don't know, this might be an unpopular opinion. I feel like Brock and Heyman have become very stale. It's the same stuff every single time.
I don't disagree. I've never been a huge Heyman person, but at least he could be 10 times better on the microphone than she can. She's so awful on it still.
His promos used to get me hyped, but now it's just the same stuff over and over again.
All right, anyway, before Elvis Andrus. We got Elvis Andrus all the way to Ronda Rousey. So yeah. Elvis Andrus.
I would not pay a third or fourth round price tag on him, but I think if you get him in the sixth or seventh round, that's fine. He's not going to hit 20 home runs again. I think he's more of a 12 to 15 home run hitter in this juice ball era, and he's going to steal 20 bases. Like, he is a lock to steal 20 bases. I think he's a better points league player. He doesn't strike. He doesn't walk all that much, but he's never struck out more than 14.7% of the time. So if you lose points for strikeouts in your points league, I think he's a very good player to get in that kind of format. But you know, as I've pointed out on the BFS, I've ended up with terrible shortstops on every single one of my roto team. So I don't have him, but I'm not opposed to taking him. I think he's fine where he's going. You just kind of have to have a perspective of what you want to get from him.
Yeah, I don't know. I own him in one league, and it's a points league roto auction draft. I mean, that I did with Frank the other day. And the only reason I bought him was because it was one of those terrible auctions. Jake, I don't know if you've ever had this happen to you where you get priced out on all the top guys. So you have like a team of like four through like six round guys. And once I realized that that was what was happening for me, I was like, I can't. I normally have a terrible shortstop as well, but I was like, I can't have my normal terrible shortstop on this team. So I did pay up to get an Elvis Andrews.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. By the way, we have some breaking news. The Diamondbacks do have a closer. You guys want to guess who it is?
Oh, please. I know you're not going to say this, but please tell me it's Archie Bradley.
It's Brad Boxberger. It has to be.
It is Brad Boxberger. It is Boxberger. I told you, I told you a couple weeks ago. I tried to tell you they wanted Archie Bradley to be Andrew Miller.
I know
that's what they wanted.
I know, but I kept holding out hope because if Archie Bradley was to close, I think he would be a top like seven or eight closer in baseball.
I agree with you, but I think it's one of these things where the arbitration is kind of the reason why they're using him in this Andrew Miller role. And he is very good at that role. So if they want to just say that that's the reason, fine. But I personally feel that it's arbitration because if he goes out there and gets 40 saves this year, they're going to have to pay him a lot more money than they would if he was in a setup role where he's going, you know, one or two innings every single time he goes out. We saw it with Dylan Betances a couple years ago, too.
I will say this, though, Jake. I said this on BFFs the other day. I think they were able to keep him in that role all year last year because Fernando Rani was, as much as I hate to say it, he was really good in the ninth inning. Brad Boxberger hasn't pitched more than 30 innings the last two seasons. So if he gets hurt or if there's struggles in the ninth, I don't know if they have the luxury of keeping Bradley outside of the ninth inning all year. They do.
They probably go to Hirano.
You know why?
They could exactly. Go to him. But
Yoshihisu or Hirano. That's who they're going to.
But I still don't feel as confident as him. I think that Archie Bradley could be this year's Corey Knebel.
I see Archie Bradley more as Andrew Miller. Like they want him to be able to pitch two innings. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah,
I get it.
I don't disagree with that. But we brought up Jake Arrieta throughout the show. He's allowed four earned runs on seven hits in the first three innings against the Pirates today. So
Jake Arrieta, everybody. There we go. Yeah. How many home runs? No home runs or did he give up one?
He gave up one home run. And it was to Josh Bell. So there you go.
There you go. Where are you guys on Josh Bell this year?
I like him better as a points league guy. He has pretty good plate discipline. He walks a lot. But I think he is a little bit undervalued. I think he could be like a 260, 270 hitter with 25 home runs. I don't think the Pirates are as bad as everybody thinks they are. I know their over-under is all the way down at like 73.5. I think that's an easy over. Every single year that Clint Hurdle has been there, he has made this team competitive. I'm not saying that they'll win like 85 to 90, but I think 75 to 80 wins is still within the realm of possibility for the Pirates.
They've also had better rosters every year
think he's a very good manager, and Ray Searies is a very, very good pitching coach.
I like Josh Bell. I'm not crazy in love with him, though. He's one of those like fallback options to me at the first base position. I have him and like Brandon Belt in like that same group. I think they're both better points guys as well, but to me, if you miss out on, you know, one of the guys who I feel more comfortable at first base, I think he is a great fallback option.
He's a perfect corner infielder.
So you're not Beyonce? Crazy in love.
Oh, crazy. I didn't get it at first. No, I'm not Beyonce.
Womp womp. Sad trombone. As I do, sad trombone. Oh, good thing the graphics there. Never mind. I was going to say sad trombone as I'm doing a violin movement over here. And then nobody can see. By the way, speaking of all this type of stuff, I do want to give everybody this read for Roto Experts exclusive edge package because time's almost out. Thursday is baseball, so you're running out of time over here. Get the package. New and improved. More analysis than ever. Look, we got the graphic too. Which threw me off as I was starting to read that. Sorry. All day chat channel, stats, projections, and improved cheat sheet generator. You get rankings, which I just updated, which I'm going to have to update the damn things again after spending 8 hours on them yesterday because of Ryan McMahon's situation. But anyway, you get my rankings, you get Tim's, you get Scott's, the King Angle. The King is the best in the business. Right, guys? Absolutely. I'm not letting you respond. And you use my code ALLINKID. You get 10% off. So go get the package. And then, I forgot. Florio's points rankings, right, Florio?
Yes. The second best in the business.
Well, no, when it comes to point rankings, you can have the best in the business. That's yours.
Thank you.
That's all he is. If you noticed, I've been sending everybody your way who asked points questions.
Yeah, I do appreciate it because they usually end up following me. Some guys don't. Some guys I'll answer and they'll just be like, well, like they'll just respond to what you say and they don't like even pretend.
Oh, here's what you do, Florio. So I'll tell both of you guys this: when you get big like me, this is what you do. Is you set up, there's a thing under the settings where you can mute everybody who doesn't follow you. So you don't ever see the tweets if they don't follow you. Because my whole opinion, and you should probably actually, you know what? You guys should just do it now and set the precedent. If you can't be bothered to follow me and you still want to try to ask me a question, no, at least follow me.
I did have one time someone went back and forth with me for like a number of tweets. It's something I tweeted. They disagreed. They kept telling me why I was wrong and everything. And then I clicked their profile and they didn't even follow me. And I was like, how did you see this to begin with? And like, what made you get so fired up that you like kept just sending like seven tweets to me about that I'm wrong?
Yeah. See, I don't get that either. People just jump into a conversation. I actually recently got blocked by somebody in the industry.
Odell Beckham.
No, somebody in the industry, not a player.
Oh, Odell Beckham goes.
No, Odell Beckham's actually upside down. By the way, yeah. See, he's head down, face down.
Oh, is it because he's gonna soon get traded, and you guys are gonna be terrible?
I'm just tired of him. I'm honestly tired of him at this point. It's just so frustrating. Like, it just come on. You want $20 million, and you can't keep yourself in check off the field. Come on, just stop. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
I think you're a little wrong.
How so?
I think that being immature in the NFL is viewed as worse than being, like, a criminal, and that's just wrong. Like, Odell Beckham hasn't broken any laws or anything. Yeah, he's immature. He needs to grow up. He needs to stay out of the press, but he could do a lot worse things.
Is cocaine legal, Mike?
He was not doing it in that video. He was not doing it.
For what it's worth, Jake, I agree with you, but, you know, I also kind of hate the Giants, so I would just love it if they traded away their best offensive player in probably their history, so it would just be comical.
Here's the thing. It's always something. We're headed down. Like, don't you see? It's kind of like you see the path we're headed down here. And it's just always something. And it's, yeah, there's something in his hand. It was pizza. Yeah, we all know it wasn't pizza, whatever it was. That all being said, whatever was in his hand wasn't legal according to the NFL. The fact that you're in a room with that wasn't legal, whatever she's doing. You're also in the room. The antics on the sideline, the, you know, kicking the net, the stuff with Josh Norman, the always be, like, now he's being sued for $15 million, which isn't his fault because it's a frivolous lawsuit. It's just, that's the point, is it's always something with him.
No, I get why it annoys you. But again, I think I'd rather that, though, than someone who is going out and being a terrible person, breaking the law, and doing some of these crimes that we see NFL players often commit.
Jake, with his trajectory going the way that it is right now, does he end up worse than Terrell Owens?
Terrell Owens as in a problem? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, as like a problem child. Because, I mean, the fact that it took Terrell Owens this long to get into the Hall of Fame just because he was a jackass is dumb. Because he was by far the most dominant wide receiver in the NFL. Like, I'm not going to say by far because Randy Moss was right there with him. But he's one of the best wide receivers in NFL history.
Here's what I'll say. The trajectory is headed in that direction. If you could tell me you can get Odell Beckham on the same page with the team and you can get him corrected, you don't trade him. I'm not saying trade him away for a third rounder. If you could get two first for him, though, at this point, I think you have to assume what the risk is and the potential return value is not necessarily going to be there at this point. Great talent, get him under wraps. You don't trade him. It could be a great, great situation for the rest of his career. On the flip side, he could destroy this team. I mean, he might not be allowed to play. But in any case, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to this network, the Fantasy Best Friends Forever, where you're watching two nerds of them, the best two nerds of them, Frank and Florio, up next. I don't know if Greg's going to be there or not, but like I said, they're the best two anyway. So tune in. It's FCT on the Fantasy Sports Network. We'll be back.